This podcast is supported by Washington.org. Washington, D.C. offers visitors so much to explore. Just ask Dayo, who shared her experiences from a recent visit.
What was your favorite food all weekend?
The Ethiopian food at Sihei.
And the first place you would visit again?
The bookstore, Little District Books.
What did you appreciate the most?
Really just like the genuine kindness of everyone that I encountered this weekend.
Why should people visit D.C.?
Well, D.C. is a place with such a thriving culture.
Washington, D.C. has something for everybody. Plan your next trip at Washington.org.
Don't never stop if you want to be on top, yeah.
Welcome to the New York Times Popcast, your proteins and minerals of music, news, and criticism. I'm your host, John Caramonica.
Tap, tap, tap in. Getting money, get rich, baby, tap in. Tap, tap, tap in. MLB, I see gang, better tap in. Tap, tap, tap in. Wrist on glitter, waist on thinner. I'ma show you how to bag an eight figure.
2020 has been a year filled with ample trauma. It's too much to talk about. But there have been a few positives, and one of the positives that I have been consistently thrilled by is the pool of talent of female rappers working at a high level, and a high level of skill and a high level of acknowledgement. Those of you who are closer to my age will remember a time when this was not a thing. This was not a thing that happened. There were fewer female artists. They were often afterthoughts in male-dominated crews. They were not given resources. They were not signed. They were not played on radio. My friends in the country music industry, probably who are still living with this kind of structure, will understand exactly what was going on for female rappers in the 80s and 90s. And here in 2020, if you're looking at TikTok, if you're looking at Spotify, you're looking at social media, maybe you're not seeing it quite as much on the radio, but you are hearing more and more women. And there's not unanimity amongst them. They are inspiring and different and flexible talents. I mean, obviously, we're Cardi and Megan, but City Girls, Flo Milli, Saweetie, Mulatto, Rico Nasty, PP Cocaine, there's so many. And I wanted to talk about what is happening in this historical moment to create the space, to give the oxygen to this phenomenon. And so I wanted to call someone who has been thinking a lot about the history of women in rap, and that's Clover Hope. Clover is a longtime music journalist, worked at Jezebel for a long time. She writes for Pitchfork. She's got a book coming out on the history of women in rap. And so Clover is calling in to talk to us, not just about what's happening right now in 2020, but the ways in which what's happening in 2020, who set the table for it, who and what was going on 10 years ago, 20 years ago, that created opportunities that are now finally flowering in this moment. So here's Clover Hope. Clover, hello, hi. Welcome.
Hi. So nice to be here virtually.
It's very exciting. And as I said to you before we started recording, it is no one's fault but my own that you have not been on podcasts before. Very, very glad that you're here. And also,
thank you.
To be honest, a great moment for you specifically to be here, given the subject matter and given that you have a book coming, right?
Right.
Let's briefly just say, so this book is coming in February. It's about the history of women in rap. It's called The Motherlode, 100 plus women who made hip hop. Give just a tiny bit of an overview of what's in the book and why you chose to do it. And then we're going to tie it all back to what's going on right now.
So the book is essentially a highlight reel of women rappers from the 70s through to now. I basically kind of wanted to tell the story of women who were prominent, but also women who kind of like maybe were forgotten about over the ages, people who had maybe like a super hit song like a Kaya or a Nonchalant.
Shout out Nonchalant, who just came up in conversation with, she's from Baltimore, right? Nonchalant?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, Lawrence. I was talking to Lawrence and we were talking about Nonchalant. But yeah, yeah, yeah. 5 o'clock, big record.
Exactly. That I would listen to on like, or watch the video on The Box growing up.
Hey, so, hey.
Shout out to The Box.
Shout out to The Box.
Yeah, I never called the 9100 number, but I was like a teen then, but that was just a quintessential show. So like I spoke to her for the book. So the idea was to, you know, just build a story, this narrative thread about how some of the, I guess like challenges that women have faced that they're still facing, but at the same time, just kind of celebrating the accomplishments of from big accomplishments to something that is just kind of like a highlight reel in hip, like a highlight in hip hop that might not necessarily be, you know, like some like explosion, but like 5 o'clock is a song that is imprinted in a lot of people's memories. So,
oh yeah,
definitely mine.
Pedro, we got to just play some 5 o'clock. I mean, like what we're, since we're getting it in, we got to just play some 5 o'clock by Nonchalant, which I used to play on my college radio show when I was DJing on Saturday nights in like 1990, what was this, 5 or 6, something like that?
97. This
97
year. Yeah. As Kim and Foxy.
It's really real when I feel the way that I do right now. I see all my brothers underground. Pushing up daisies, man, it amazes me that you can't see where you're gonna be. A statistic, everybody's gone cold ballistic. If you had a good day, damn, I must have missed it. Cause you're mad at the universe, go to hell with everybody else, cause you want your own first. I got the urge to let you in on a little secret.
That's the story that I want to tell. You know, you have these big records, and then you had people like her, you know, who in that same year were kind of just around and, you know, contributing to the story of hip hop in some way.
Now, that's a great transition to why we're here today and what we're talking about today, because I imagine part of the story that you're telling about that mid-90s period is sort of about the lack of oxygen for female rappers who were not the female rapper or one of the two female rappers of the moment. And how this has sort of been a persistent thing in hip hop, that there's often one woman that is allowed to kind of ascend to the A-list, or maybe two, but the industry, whether it's radio or record labels, have not done a good job of supporting multiple talents at the same time. This has kind of been a chronic issue. 2020 feels like, and really last year as well, feels like maybe that's starting to change a tiny bit. Like maybe whether it's streaming or whether it's social media, there are structural changes that are happening that are kind of unleashing a whole range of artists. And that's true of women in hip hop. It's true in other genres as well. And so I feel like we really have a bounty right now of people who are getting a lot of attention. Let's start with the big picture question. Do you think that things in 2020 are in fact more open and more tolerant and more accepting for women in hip hop? Or do you think that it's sort of illusory, that we're seeing more, but on a kind of like structural level, not much has changed?
I do think it has changed in the sense that the fact that more women are simply visible is a change, whether they're doing it themselves, you know, or being propped up by a label. I mean, for the most part, a lot of them are doing it themselves. And that is the change, that they can kind of go on social media and create these fan bases, and they can build their own kind of like circle before it blossoms into something bigger, which is, you know, what someone like Cardi and Megan did, you know, to where people are just drawn to them. And so I think that is just a huge change in comparison to the 90s, when you just had women had to sign to a label. They had to sign to a bigger rapper's kind of crew.
A man. They had to sign to a man. I mean, let's just keep it a buck. They just signed it to a male rapper-led imprint of a major label. You know,
yeah.
4 times out of 5, it was probably that setup.
Right. Pretty much that was the way to get in. Like, that was the access, from Emil being part of Rockefeller to Remy Ma and Terror Squad. That was more, you know, like the early 2000s. But I do think there's a change, there's a shift in terms of DIY being the main method of, you know, getting noticed. And then so social media just being a huge part of that, as it is part of like everything in life that is different now. So I think it's different, but that at the same time, there are still structural kind of issues that shows through Megan's success, like, you know, and through what she's been through in the past here, those are the issues that still remain, that women still don't have the same access points and entry points. I do think it's changing.
I think even 12, 24 months ago, I was starting to feel like, oh, okay, like, because the conventional pathways are no longer the only pathways, I'm now seeing people use new tools to kind of get attention. And some of those people do get upstreamed into the conventional structures, but not everybody does. But that's okay, because they can have like completely substantive and strong careers working at what we used to think of at the margins, but which are no longer, in fact, the margins.
I had spoken to Elizabeth Mendez Berry, writer who's like great and excellent and just so good.
Shout out, Liz.
Great point she made was just about, you know, like women can have a career off of rap right now. Like they don't have to be like the main star. Like they can kind of do their thing and make money and kind of have their fan base. And that's just a level of just a living that was just not available to them years ago. And that is just a huge thing.
Megan and Cardi at this point feel almost, dare I say, establishment. I mean, we're literally talking on the day where Megan got nominated for 4 Grammy Awards. Her album, Good News, you can call it her debut album. It's not real, you know, I don't know. It's what's an album anyway in 2020? You know, like I think Sugar and Fever are would be perfectly fine to call those debut albums, but for whatever marketing purpose, Good News is being called a debut album. That's out and will likely be the number one album of next week.
That would be a great album title. What's the album anyway?
It's true though, right?
One needs to use that. Yeah.
Well, especially when it's like the album is maybe my 4th project and it's 7 songs, but also maybe 14 songs when I put out the deluxe edition 4 months later, and maybe with the remixes, you know, that's what an album is. And you remember when Kanye was like changing Life of Pablo, like in real time, like re-uploading versions. And I remember writing something at time being like, this is crazy. Like, can you believe he put an album out and then he changed the song? Like, that's unheard of. And now 4 years later, it's like, if you're not doing that, you're actually making a mistake.
Right. You're working to the last minute.
Exactly. And then beyond the last minute. Like, yeah. It's like basically like I turned in my test and then like 20 minutes later called up and was like, actually, the answer to question 7 is B. I'm sorry. I just figured it out. So that's the vibe. And also it's like people talk in eras now, you know, it's like the Good News era. That means the album as a kind of discrete unit is like less important than the era as a discrete unit. So it kind of doesn't matter if the album changes, because the era is what matters now.
One thing I found like so interesting, because I had spoken to a few of the women, the younger women, like Rico Nasty and Princess Nokia for Sori earlier this year. And one thing I found just like so interesting that I don't know why I hadn't really thought of it, but just the fact that Nicki Minaj is like the North Star, like the inspiration for this newer group of women. Like the era that is happening now like begins with her, whereas like my reference points are Queen Latifah, Salt and Peppa. That for me was like the beginning of my history with women MCs, and I think that it shows in the like her being their kind of source, basically, like shows in the way they dress, or like the way how resourceful they are, how weird they are. And I think it makes me wonder how the next generation of women will be with Megan and Cardi being their, you know, center.
Sometimes I'll like lament the ahistoricity of like certain young artists and like say people for whom Drake is their elder, right? And it's like they kind of can't imagine the battles about authenticity and regionalism and genre that we had to struggle with in the 90s and the 80s, and even to a certain degree into the mid 2000s. But, you know, it's like if Drake is your entry point and all that stuff is kind of settled business, then it's like, well, then you can kind of improvise off that and go in crazier directions, which is, I think, what you see with the kind of like Young Thug and post Young Thug artists. But I think it's the same thing if Nicki is your North Star, right? Because Nicki isn't a person who, even though she came in under Lil Wayne, she's not kind of necessarily completely conceptualized as like a crew rapper. She's a standalone pop and hip hop superstar who's incredibly talented and also completely eccentric. So if that's what you heard when you were like 9 years old or 12 years old, imagine what you're going to be able to do when you're 18, 20, 25. So I feel you for sure.
And doing away with some of the boundaries.
Oh yeah.
Including the idea of other people writing your material. Like Cardi was pretty open about like having writers, and that, you know, wasn't something that a woman would say, you know.
Oh God, no.
So
like, can you imagine?
Like it was just, people just expected that women weren't writing for themselves, which a lot of them really were. You know, I mean, obviously for any rapper, ghostwriting was kind of like a sin.
And even though we of course need to acknowledge it was happening, just nobody talked about it, you know, now. And it's only changed now that people talk about it. And also that hip hop has become, it's not that it's become closer to pop sonically, although partially that's true, but in terms of how it gets made, the studios that it gets made in, the rooms that it gets made in, the people who contribute to the making of it, there's a lot more overlap structurally between conventional pop songwriting and sort of like mainstream hip hop songwriting. So those songwriters, quote unquote, whether they're ghostwriters or songwriters, are trickling into hip hop in a way they probably just didn't 10 or 15 years ago. What are your thoughts on Good News, this Megan record?
I listened to it a few times. It kind of is growing on me, essentially. You know, everyone has kind of like their specialty or like their trademark. I think she, like her confidence and like her triumph really sells that record, I think. And there's a lot of like listening to it again, just thinking about her story more so than like the hooks. It just made me appreciate it more. Because in the, you know, the first listen, I was kind of like, the hooks aren't grabbing me. It wasn't kind of like sticking to me, basically. But, you know, I think for someone like her, it's just such a full context picture that I have to think about too, like when I listen to it. So I do like it. I just like, it is growing on me.
I think this album, the context really matters on this album more so than on the previous records. Let's listen to the opening song on Good News, which is Shots Fired.
Imagine lying blind by shooting the real, real. Just a safe face for rapping, rappers you chill with. Imagine me giving a fuck, it was your birthday. You and your feelings, I just thought it was another Thursday. Now imagine me blocking on some Josh. I don't want you on to believe you wouldn't have been invited. And if it wasn't for me, same week you'd have been indicted. You walk the M's, not the talk. I guess that made my friend excited. Now y'all in cahoots. You a puss in boots. You shot a 5-10-10 with a 22. Talking about bones.
What has there been like 7 or 8 months since her last project dropped? But they've been a very, very event-filled 7 or 8 months. So this album sort of has to solve kind of like an aesthetic purpose, which is like, who is Megan Thee Stallion as a newly arrived pop celebrity figure? But also, here's this horrific thing that happened to her 3 or 4 months ago with the shooting incident. It's almost incumbent upon her, it's expected that she's going to find some way to address it in the music. So I think you're right that on some level, this record functions as narrative building, public front-facing processing. She's got to do some of that. It also has to function as music, but it sort of has to do these dual roles. I probably prefer Tina Snow or Fever to this record. Megan's like a really, really strong, sturdy rapper. Like, you know, she's like a rapper the way we used to think of rappers. You know, she's a very kind of like,
Out of breath rapper.
Yes, exactly. Right. The thing I keep thinking of, and I hope I haven't said this on podcast before. I don't think I have. But like, I feel like her raps have like really square corners. Like they remind me of like a very sturdy piece of furniture. It's like they're very structural. They're really firm. They like hold up, you know, they're durable. And I think that remains true. But I think I probably had a similar feeling that you had as far as the hooks. I don't always love the beat selections and the hooks on these records. And I think they can be a hindrance to what she does well sometimes.
I want also a bit variety with the flow.
Yes.
But I think of, just in terms of the story, that actually made me think of like Get Rich or Die Trying with 50, and just how I might have absorbed that album if there was, if his kind of backstory wasn't attached to it. And I mean, I'm sure it would have been, like, it's a great album, but everything around it also kind of made it so impactful. And I think Megan, yeah, she is doing that thing of, like, literally wrapping circles around someone. Like, she's trying to do that. And I think you can tell she's, like, actively a student. Like, she's actively trying to rap very hard.
Oh, yeah. And,
you know, that's, you know, just testament to the hard work. I do, as of now, kind of prefer the mixtapes, quote-unquote mixtapes, albums, whatever, previous projects. But I do think it's a solid piece of work.
Yeah, I feel like she hasn't quite arrived at the fully flowered pop famous, like, Z. And I don't mean Z100 as an insult. I just mean, like, when you're big enough that your records get played on Z100, you know, like, I think we're still maybe one step away from whatever that is. That feels like it's still yet to come. So I think this feels to me like a transitional record.
I'm more excited about, like, what she will do next.
There's a lot more. We got loads more to talk about. We open with Saweetie, and I feel like Saweetie has kind of had one very, very reliable banger after the next over the last, like, 18 months. And they're kind of, they're witty. They're a little sassy. They're very bouncy. They're buoyant. Her flow pattern really works well with kind of, like, up-tempo, bouncy production. Tap In is, I mean, look, it's just Two Shorts Blow the Whistle. It's a great song, but it doesn't just sound like a borrowing. It's kind of an improvement on an innovation atop. What's your vibe on Saweetie?
She's one of my favorites. She wields social media in a really smart way. And I think one thing with her is that there was a time, it was probably after Nicki, where I felt like rap needed more women just making fun party songs, like the Futures and Ray Shremmers. And I was like, I just want, like, a Ray Shremmer that's like...
Oh, yeah. Remember Ray Shremmer? Why does Ray Shremmer feel like it's 20 years ago?
I know. It feels so... People like that who are... They don't have to be the one. And I think that was the issue with women. Like, it's always like, you have to be the one and you can't just kind of just make a party record. And what I like about Saweetie is that these are party songs. They're, you know, just upbeat, kind of like light, very California, you know, bright songs. And I enjoy that she has fun with it. And I think that we needed that, basically.
Let's listen to another Saweetie record real fast. Let's listen to My Type.
Craft matters in small ways, like how coffee is made or how a wooden table is built piece by piece. And in not so small ways, like how your money is cared for. At UBS, we elevate investing to a craft. We deliver our services with passion, expertise, and meticulous attention to detail. This is what investing means to UBS. Not just work, but a craft. Discover more at ubs.com/craft. The value of investments may fall as well as rise, and you may not get back the amount originally invested.
Hi, this is Eric Kim with New York Times Cooking. As a recipe developer, I spend a lot of my time trying to come up with dishes that are quick, easy, but also very special. For me, that means dishes like gochugaru salmon. It's a crispy salmon fillet with a salty, sweet glaze that bubbles up and candies. I love cooking this because it only takes 20 minutes. I developed this recipe when I was down in Georgia with my family. It stars a Korean red pepper powder called gochugaru. I love the way it blooms in the maple syrup and the rice vinegar. If you don't have gochugaru, you should totally get some. It's super versatile. It's not just that it brings heat, but fruity sweetness as well. You can get this recipe and so many more ideas on New York Times Cooking. Visit nytcooking.com to get inspired.
what you just said really, I think, is the thing that is like the loud, that's like the loud part, which is there's no pressure on being the one. And I think that that pressure has been so detrimental, obviously, in the genre as a whole and in terms of how its business is conducted and sort of systematic dismissal and poor treatment of female artists, to say nothing of executives and fans. That's a whole separate episode of Popcast. But the idea that if there was a successful female rapper, say a Foxy or a Kim in that era, or a Latifah in that era, that if someone else wanted to thrive, that they were implicitly, it was a zero-sum game. Someone else had to suffer. Someone had to get knocked down a peg, whether it's in a battle or whether it's in radio airtime or contract money or whatever, that there literally was just this pool of resources that a woman could have. And if another woman wanted it, they would have to somehow take it away from this, the person who had it. That's kind of how it felt in the 90s.
Right. At least in terms of mainstream people who were in the forefront, because I guess in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was, you know, the boom of Eve and Trina and Missy. And then you had people like Lady Luck, who I talked to. I guess like even Angie Martinez trying out rapping was, sign of it. You know, people wanted to sign women to their labels, like at that point. It was just that, you know, it was pretty much, I guess, mid-90s with Lil Kim and Foxy. There were a few seats in the front, essentially, or a few seats like for the, like it was like Missy, Kim, Foxy, Lauren Hill.
Sure.
And then, of course, like the regional, basically the regional rappers, like the Mia X's and
Gangsta Boo and LaShawn.
Right. Yeah.
Did you get a sense when you were talking to folks, did something change kind of throughout the course of the 90s that led to that kind of like mini boomlet, the kind of Trina Eve era? Because Missy, I always feel like, lived a little bit outside of that, just because obviously the quality of the music was so undeniable. You know, she was basically an auteur. In addition to being a performer, she's a production and a writing auteur. And her visuals obviously set her in her own class. When you were talking to folks, did you get an idea of, had something changed? Like, was there kind of like a crack, a ray of light that all of a sudden was shining through at that time that maybe hadn't been, you know, in the early 90s or certainly in the 80s?
Well, I definitely think it was just that Kim and Foxy really created this template that was easy to kind of try to replicate. Or maybe not easy, but kind of, it was a clear template of like you rapping, being glamorous, having style, being fashionable as a woman, being kind of like sexual. So that was a clear template that they could be like, okay, do you fit into this? And so then it's just really about trying to sign a template versus trying to sign like a unique rapper or like a unique personality. And so I think that just became the standard. And they set off like this age of image construction. You can't just be a female rapper who wasn't dressed up or wasn't kind of like fly and sexy. So that played a big role in why there were more signings in the late 90s, and then also why it dropped off, because that only worked for so long.
We haven't mentioned the Brat.
The Brat.
Very important. First female rapper to go platinum, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, with Funkified. Love that video. Another video that played on the box so much. I love that video.
Speaking of the kind of Foxy Kim era and what template that set, when I listen to City Girls, I think, well, okay, here's Foxy and Kim, but they're on the same team. Here is a group that very much reminds me of the raw energy, the sexual bravado, the ferocity, and the sharp kiss-offs. Still rugged, but also like very much real ownership in a glamorous way. Adrian, if you have to bleep me, it's fine. But let's listen to a little bit of Duck.
Rose, Dallas, and Yen. What is top? Bentley's, Rovers, and Benz. What is fly private to Alice to
City Girls have had an eventful few years. It's JT and Young Miami. JT was in jail for a while, maybe like a year or so, kind of when things were taking off. I think it was a credit card fraud or something along those lines. What's your vibe on City Girls?
That record, just a great record. I was such a Trina fan. Like Trina, I mean, everyone knows the essence of Trina. It like kind of lives in them. Just a sense of that just dirty, kind of unapologetic gets used a lot, I guess. But that is a great word
right.
for, you know, what they do.
But and, they mean, but it's real for them. It's accurate for them.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, that's what I kind of love about that. I think they also are great at the anthem making, you know, like the anthem records like that Trina was good at. Before job interviews, I would listen to Baddest Bitch, basically. Like that was my theme song for prepping and trying to like get in the mode of like, yeah, I got this, you know. And that was like my anthem. And so I think that's what City Girls are good at. And they're basically kind of carrying that torch.
Should we listen to Baddest Bitch right now?
That'll be great.
All right, let's get into a little Trina.
No time for the little tricks. You see, the bigger the trick, the bigger the bank, the bigger the biz, the better your chance to get close to his rich friends. I'm going after the big man. A G-string make it stand, make it quick then. Romance by the nightstand, like lightning. I want a man with a red ring. Bank accounts in the Philippines. Black metal take everything.
So to the point you just made, here's the thing about City Girls that I find, I don't know if it's the most striking, because City Girls are great without this thing that I'm about to say, but I do think it kind of deepens the context. The City Girls' widespread use on TikTok, and that's not to say that Megan isn't used on TikTok, Saweetie isn't used on TikTok, but the range of City Girl songs that are used on TikToks and teenage girls, plenty of teenage boys for that matter, using to soundtrack and to rap along with, these are the fully formed characters that are influencing everybody in that space. If you only paid attention to TikTok, like you would actually think City Girls are the most popular. I almost want to say just most popular rappers, like forget female rappers, like just rappers, the ubiquity of their records, the way that those records have been remade. Like, you know, Megan had a big year with Savage and et cetera, but like it's a dance. City Girls, it's an attitude. It's a perspective.
Yeah. And it's this incredible amount of confidence. And I know that sometimes it's maybe like underrated a little bit. I find that, I mean, in a lot of the new women, just kind of, there's just incredible amount of like, I am the center of this universe. And it's really just fascinating to watch. That's what makes them anthems. And I do think a lot of that is also, again, that should be a broken record, but an offshoot of the kind of DIY era where if you feel like you built something on your own, like that just automatically kind of like gives you that sense of accomplishment.
And the combination of that kind of like built in, like I did it, with what you said earlier, which is that Nikki is the North Star, right? There's nothing reluctant about Nikki. There's nothing reticent, nothing shy about Nikki. So if like that's your starting point, you're like, well, that's what a female rapper is. It's peak Nikki, right? It's like early 2010s Nikki. If that's your starting point, and then you're building your own thing, then you're going to end up with something like City Girls for sure.
Right. And like Cash Dolls.
I want to play, and it's not from this year's City Girls record. It's from the last City Girls record, but we got to play that bit from What We Doing, where they're kind of like going back and forth talking about going out that night. Which reminds me, and just to like date myself, like reminds me of Phone Tap by The Firm, but like the going out to the club version of Phone Tap by The Firm. Like, it's such a good conceit. I'm actually surprised like other artists haven't really used that conceit, broadly speaking, because I think like the back and forth and the kind of the incremental storytelling where it's like you talk and then I talk back and I add one detail and then you respond and you add another detail. It's such a great idea for songs, but I'm just surprised more don't do it. Anyway, I love this. It's What We Doing. Girl, it's Friday night. Let's go.
Girl, it's Friday night. We ain't kicking in a while on a Friday night. It's time to step out on this Friday night. You acting like an old lady.
Girl, you probably right. Let me look up in the closet, see what I could wear. Check the bank account, let me see what I could spell. Baby daddy might trip, but I don't even care.
You don't ever go out, he been out all year.
Girl, you gon' get a beat up.
Child, please, what time we gon' meet up? This soft ass ain't gon' do shit, but talk like he always do.
You ain't nothing but trouble.
Sure is.
You my dog and I love
you. Mentioned Cash Doll. Ice me out. Let's talk about it. Tell me about Cash Doll.
That is kind of like the my main kind of anthem for her. I haven't gotten that much into her persona.
To be fair, that album is like, it's the best song on that album, but that album is like mostly very much like that song. That's kind of what she does. You know, she wants 20 bands for her anklet. You know what I mean? Like, that's the lane.
Ice me out. Ice me out. Ice me out. Ice me out.
I want Tiffany. I want Angel City. I want all that ish. Y'all know I be stunting. You know I'm so worthy. I want that bust down Roly. You know diamonds make me feel so horny.
Bad muff, muff. I got Louis for my luggage. I need money, so I hustle. This ain't fake. Watch Busta. Please don't try me. I might cut your cash. Get crazy when you touch her. She wear chains when she get her charms because she loves.
I think there's just a certain, I guess I used the word audacity before, but people like her kind of remind me of Foxy. Foxy's generation of women, there was a kind of like the silent male partner, or, you know, like they had to have that credibility of men backing them up and being like, you know, oh, she's nice, whatever. That's not necessary for Cash Doll and like City Girls and like the newer faces. They don't have to have that cosign.
And also you see this with Megan in a similar way to a slightly lesser degree with City Girls or Cash Doll, especially when we're talking about sex raps. Look, most male rappers, for whatever they fancy themselves as, really aren't about that life when it comes to sex raps, right? They're just really not. A lot of these artists that we're talking about really do take that stuff very seriously. And they're good, and they're funny, and they're clever, and they're like eyebrow arching and eye rolling. And I remember, what's the record with DaBaby and Megan? It's Cash Shit. DaBaby is maybe the male rapper of the moment who really rises to the occasion when it comes to rapping about this stuff. You know, has no kind of shame about it, has no compunctions about it, clearly revels in pushing the boundaries of it. It's interesting to see, not that he gets flustered in the company of rapping with women who are rapping about the same subject matter, but it's interesting to see he's the side piece, right? Like, he's the accent piece.
Right. Yeah, he's secondary. Right.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we've gotten this far into the show and we haven't talked about WAP, Cardi and Megan's song. We should play it. Pedro, you pick whatever part you feel is family friendly. I don't even know. It might just be the instrumental. I don't know.
Look at my thighs, it's wet, it's wet. Come take a dive. Tie me up like I'm surprised. That's role play. I wear disguise. I want you to park that Big Mac truck right in this little garage. Make me dream, make it stream. I don't public, make the scene. I don't cook, I don't clean, but let me tell you, I got this ring.
Gobble me, swallow me, drip down inside of me. Quick, yeah. Jump out for you, let it get inside of me. I tell them where to put it, never tell them where I'm about to be. I run down on them before I have an eye. Running me, talk your pal, fight your
WAP is a better sex record than almost any male rapper sex record. Like, period.
Yeah, I think one thing, you know, people have this argument about how women are, like, selling sex. They're still selling sex, whatever. Which in some regard I get, but it's obviously different when they have the control and kind of like when they are the ones kind of calling the shots. And it's also that it's not that women fans don't want to hear or see women being sexy.
Yeah, of
course. It's not that we don't want to hear them rapping about sex. Like, we want to hear that. It makes a difference when it's them kind of like being, you know, primary and not secondary in their own story or within their own bodies. I think that is a big difference versus Kim having Biggie kind of push her to the front of the stage, essentially. So, you know, I think that shows a lot in WAP, in the video, presentation, the song. It's just kind of so filthy And in the tradition of Trina, and I would go back to people who maybe less known, like MC Choice in Houston, who was on Rap-A-Lot and had this whole kind of, like, her whole album was just one of the first kind of, you know, just dirty rap albums from a woman. It's this whole tradition of women doing that. And this is, it's almost like the final form of WAP. It's like the final form of that trend or whatever. It's, this is what we can get when they are left to their own devices and being able to create their own story.
We should obviously contextualize. I mean, that impulse predates hip hop. I mean, it's not as if, blue, you know, female blues singers didn't work blue. It's, you know, it's not as if it never, you know, was present in R&B or disco or anything else. It's part of a long tradition of Black female performance. It's just strange how for a time in hip hop, it kind of got sidelined or marginalized. I remember having a conversation, and this was a long time ago, but I can't quite remember who the conversation was with, but I do remember the context, which was, this is early Nicki, and Nicki obviously, like, can dress provocatively. You know, she was not shy about making that part of her presentation, but Nicki is also, you know, ironic and witty and self-referential and complex as a performer. And the person I was talking to was a rap fan from my generation, you know, older, and was sort of saying, like, I can't listen to Nicki Minaj because she's selling sex. And I was like, that's a weird obstacle for Nicki Minaj, who may well be selling sex, but that's like one of 37 things that she's selling. Even her presentation of sexuality is wrapped in these layers of performativity.
Right, humor.
Of course. And so I just remember being very, very struck how the possibility that fans of an earlier generation might not be able to get over the, like, oh, look at that bikini, you know, like they could, that it was, it might prove too much of a hump. But this was like the early 2010s. I think if you're still living like that or thinking like that in 2020, you're really not taking in the depth of what these artists are doing.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. If you just are under the impression, or kind of, you just kind of grew up just thinking that, oh, women selling sex, like, it's hand wringing kind of, then you'll come into it with that lens. And I've tried not to do that. Like, I just, but also I was always into, like, hardcore is my favorite, you know, one of my favorite albums in general.
Yeah, sure.
And yeah, I think you gotta let it go. And also think about, like, what women want. Like their fans are women. So, you know.
Can we talk about Flo Milli for a minute?
Yeah. And I think she is, like, my new, like, the newest that I've gotten into.
So I was recently putting together my album of the year list. And so I was just, like, really diving into a bunch of stuff, re-listening to records, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, can't give away what the list is, but I will say I very much enjoy the Flo Milli record. All right, so let's listen to In the Party. It's Flo Milli.
Yeah, yeah. Suck when I step in the party. Y'all may do want to feel on my body. And if I take them, I won't say I'm sorry. I do what I want. Don't report to nobody. I'm a bad bitch. Don't let them tell you that I'm average. Ex dude mad because he can't have it. He think I miss him. Don't want him a tabby. If he take a hit of this, I know he a dick. I'm a boss, so he ain't no assistance. I think he like the fact that I'm gifted. I just do me. I don't need no permission. A bad bitch with no morals. I'm sick.
Okay. You were talking earlier about the DIY aspect. And that's not to say that these artists aren't signed to labels or don't work with producers or so on and so forth, but there does feel like a kind of quicker arc between, like, woke up, decided to rap, and now have a fan base and a style. Flo Milli feels like a good example of someone who probably, I think she's signed, she's on maybe Sony or RCA, but the stuff that's on this album doesn't sound radically different than the stuff that was on the first single that I heard, which was Beef, Flo Mix, which came out, I think, last year. Her style is very almost, like, offhandedly bratty. I wouldn't say it's, like, hyper musical. Like, she's not very melodic. She's almost just kind of like, she's basically just, like, shit talking. And there happens to be kind of like a broken beat in the background, but it's very, very effective. The album's called Ho Why Is You Here. To your point about the DIY-ness, the idea that someone like Flo Milli can have this full record that sounds kind of like what her first song sounded like. You know, it hasn't been kind of like weighed down with guest appearances and $50,000 beats from name producers and stuff like that. It's just basically like, okay, you got kind of popping doing that thing. Okay, here's 10 more of those. We'll see where this goes. And that feels like a very 2020 kind of approach to building a fan base and a career.
There may be a line from like a Gangsta Boo or something to Flo Milli. It reminds me, I guess, of like the regional kind of rap boom, in the sense that, you know, that was the, like, you know, regional rap, like those movements were the version of DIY back then.
Now, Flo Milli has a record called Weak, which kind of is a riff on the SWV song. I feel like in most of the artists that we're talking about, this comes up with Megan, it comes up with Saweetie, and I don't think it's exclusive to female rappers, but I do see it happening here. There's at least one or two of the major songs that are, in essence, remakes, quasi-remixes, you know, updated versions of well-known songs. Sometimes I find that to be a struggle. I think Tap In is an example where I think it works really well, but I think sometimes it can be a hindrance because then you kind of get lost in what the original was, not so much in your own perspective and in your own thing. And this also happens. I mean, this, the past like 12 months in like Latin pop and reggaeton, and this was going on a lot, and it was really, really frustrating. But I wonder if you think, is this something that is kind of like a necessary step for attention getting? Do you think it's detrimental at all to use that as like a stepping stone to getting known?
I do think, yeah, it helps with attention. And I think that is just the natural kind of thinking for this generation. I mean, if you, like, they're finding out about songs through, you know, people are doing YouTube covers of songs to get attention, like Soulja Boy, you know, or just naming a YouTube video after a famous song or naming songs after people. Like, it's kind of just the way that they kind of operate. And also, to me, it's just sampling. I mean, it's a little more on the face sampling. Like, it's less kind of, you know, what a soul sampling is, more, I guess, like a little more maybe intricate or like involved.
Okay. We haven't talked about Mulatto yet. And Mulatto's interesting because we were talking about Flo Milli kind of coming in through essentially a DIY or quasi DIY pathway. Mulatto actually sort of had a slightly different story, which is she was on that Jermaine Dupri rap competition show called The Rap Game. Take that, D Smoke.
Grammy nominated.
Right. Grammy nominated, D Smoke, but still take that. Someone who was here before you. She won. She won maybe the first season or second season of that show. And now she got a big hit. It's called Moo-Wop, which is basically, I think it's just Gucci Mane's Freaky Girl. Again, to that point. But I wanted to talk actually about another song that she has. It's from the most recent record. It's called Bitch from the South, and it's with Saweetie and Trina. So let's listen to a little bit of the Mulatto verse from the song.
I throw that back to see if he gon' catch it. I ain't athletic, but it's tennis for the necklace, yeah. Hey, where that cash at? I stack it like Tetris. Real good, real plugs and connections. First, I make him eat it till he lock jaw. Give it to him good, knock the socks off. I run it up.
We talked a little bit about the implied or actual tension in earlier generations between female artists, whether it was authentic or whether it was pumped up for marketing purposes, or whether it did in fact reflect like limited resource pool divided up amongst a certain number of people. One thing I've noticed in the last year, and the Cardi and Megan song speaks to this song speaks to this. There's that Chloe and Halle song on the Megan record. There's a song with a bunch of folks on it. Everybody's working together. Everybody is, I mean, there might be some beefs I don't know about, but everybody's working together. And I'm curious what your perspective, having seen it go the other way in the past, I'm curious what your perspective on this happening right now.
I think it's really just a matter of there are more people, like more faces.
There are more.
There's been more collaborations between, like, in the past year, past couple years, and maybe like all of the past years combined. Like, I have a page where in my book about, it's really, it's like, here are some posse cuts, basically. And I could not find posse cuts beyond like three women. So you have like Ladies Night with Kim and Foxy and Missy and Angie. Yeah. And the song of like Charlie Baltimore. And so, you know, there's definitely, I think it really is a result of just there being so many women out there and available. You know, I mean, that's why Ladies Night even happened, because, you know, these women were kind of like on the same plane and trying to like having success at the same time.
I mean, just imagine if you were a female rapper in 1995 and you like admired another female rapper who was like on a different label or with a different crew. Like, imagine the hassle of getting in touch with that person.
Yeah. And I think they also are very savvy and they know the impact of having more women on a track. Like, they know that's what people want. Like, people have been clamoring for this for years. Like, can we get some more women posse cuts? And, you know, so I think a lot of them are just like, oh, you know, the fans will go crazy if we get on this song together. So, you know, that's the whole concept of WAP. It's like, from, you know, the video having all those women in it, and, you know, just Cardi and Megan teaming up in itself being an event, they know that, you know, because of how things were before, that this is like a major, because this wasn't happening before.
You aggregate fan bases now. You're not stealing. It's not like I want to get on your record so I can steal your fans. It's if I get on your record, then my fans and your fans, plus the exponential power of the union, kind of like grows the whole thing. I did want to ask before we're finishing up, is there a female rapper current the last couple years who you think doesn't get enough attention or is just on the verge of getting attention? Someone you want to like shine a light on a little bit.
So I think Rico Nasty is just another example of this offshoot of Nicki, who has the characters and she's a weirdo, you know.
Nicki at the Halloween shop.
Right. And Nicki just proved that could be a winning formula in some way, that you could kind of, you know, not just be this sexy image or just this one note image. There's just so much that is available to women because of Nicki. I think she should get that credit for like just breaking some of these preconceived notions and about how women should be, or like how, you know, like how they should present. I like that Rico is just, because of what Nicki did, like she can kind of have this career that is maybe not in the spotlight, but she's kind of making her punk rap music.
Yeah.
Has her, you know, style and can wear what she wants and, you know, have this visibility without having to be kind of like the one again.
What's a good Rico song that you want to play?
Let's do iPhone.
Okay, so I think people will probably assume that I'm going to want to talk about PP Cocaine, but I've already spoken about PP Cocaine, the Tekashi of TikTok, the female Tekashi of TikTok. But actually, I feel like a person that I haven't seen a lot of talking about is Armani Caesar, who is the first lady of Griselda, old man rap universe. There's an album that she put out earlier this year that I think is very good. And so let's listen to a little bit of that. This is a song called Gucci Casket, which I hope to have someday. But go soft, mad seeds, cause you can't get no more. Cold, bitch, keep my wrists on frost. Iced out Audemars in the car with the flip up doors. Never witnessed the so boss. Real official broad to make you put them other chicks on pause. I was in the strip club getting trash bag money. Throw security is stacking, told to grab that from me. Niggas trying to throw salt, but they cash be funny. So I should be the last one to laugh at, honey. So Clover, before we go, I feel like I feel very optimistic about everything we've been talking about, but also kind of what will 2021 look like? Like, what will 2022 look like? Like, this doesn't feel like something where there's going to be a retrenchment. This feels like this could be the new normal, which would be radical if that's the case. What do you think?
I do think it's the new normal in the same way that young male rappers have the same access and they can kind of come out and do their own thing. Like, there's a million Chance the Rappers because Chance the Rapper was so successful. And that will just be a new template, like a new kind of mode of success. And I think because we have all these women who are on the charts, I think last year was like the most number of women on the like Hot 100 and like in ever. I think that is like a big turning point. I mean, there'll always be maybe kind of eras where there are fewer. I just can't imagine really that there will kind of be that era where there's only one, like when it was only Nicki.
Okay, so we'll reconvene in 2021 and 2022 and onward. You can have like the double XL freshman class, but all women. It's going to be every year. That would 10. Be,
yeah.
I mean, if you're listening, Vanessa, you know, give it a thought, something to think about. Clover, what a pleasure. Thanks for coming through.
Thank you so much. Great conversation.
And that's our show. Thank you to Clover Hope. Listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast. Subscribe to podcasts anywhere you get your audio content. Email us at podcast@nytimes.com. Get on the Facebook group, working on Discord and subreddit and so on and so forth. All that info coming soon. TK, our producer, as ever, is Paige Rosado from Head Stepper Media. We will be back next week.
Hey, bitches!
Hey! Get up! Hey!